Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This is Monsters Who Murder, Serial Killer Confessions.
Police found 27 corpses.
Australia's worst serial killer.
Even though I didn't want to get in the car, I had to.
With Amanda Howard and Robert McKnight.
Hello there and welcome to Monsters Who Murder, Serial Killer Confessions. I'm Rob McKnight and I'm joined as always by the serial killer whisperer, true crime author and criminologist Amanda Howard. Hello, Amanda.
Hello, Rob. How are you going?
Rob, this is a new turn of events.
I know.
I mean, you've never called me Rob before.
No.
We knew each other when I was younger, and I was always a Robert until I went to uni, where I became a Rob. That was enforced on me. It wasn't a choice, and I still got the scars. But you've never called me Rob. This is, wow, what a day.
I know, it just felt better because people know you as Rob, and I know a lot of people still refer to you as Robert, but I thought I'd go with it. I think I have to let go of my high school friend Robert and be with my now co-host Rob.
Oh, there you go. I don't think I like it. We are just being honest. We are talking about the case of Debbie Stevens today. She was on a emergency call. Now, we've done emergency calls in the past, but this one is a real journey, and we're devoting the entire profile to this recording, Amanda. It will certainly take us on a journey, won't it?
It will, and I need to steel myself because this one actually I sobbed whilst I was listening to it. So it's just one of those ones that I'm sorry, guys, I will likely get emotional. You may not see it because I had Botox yesterday, but it's certainly a journey, that's for sure.
It certainly is, and that is coming up soon on this edition of Monsters Who Murder Serial Killer Confessions. In the meantime, let's get into the news. And two serial killers have won a legal battle to keep their privacy during parole hearings in Canada. A federal court judge has ruled serial sex killer Paul Bernardo and cop killer Craig Munro have a right to privacy, despite the families of their victims requesting information about the pair. The Canadian government fought against the release of any information and has also asked the families to pay legal costs of $19,000. Amanda, isn't this a kick in the face? I mean, the families who were victims of these killers want information, and now the government wants them to pay for trying to get that information. I cannot believe this.
It is a crazy outcome that's come, especially that the families have been asked to pay the court fees. Because what we've seen before, especially in the Paul Bernardo case with Carla Homolka, she was released after getting an absolute incredible deal that sort of placed her as a victim as well instead of as a partner to Paul Bernardo. So they're trying to save face because if they open it up and we get to see all of this in the public arena, there's going to be so many other flaws they really don't want us to know. And the fact that Bernardo is up for a parole hearing is disgusting enough. So
you're saying this reeks of a cover-up?
I think it's going to, if they had won, we would have seen more information about what's going on, because we know that Bernardo has always protested his innocence, and yet there's film of what he did. So I think it's things like that that they really want to be out there in the public arena, and the court has said no, they deserve the right to privacy that everyone else does. But I think that they waived that right when they decided to kill people.
Could not agree more. And when they're found guilty of killing said people, it's just flabbergasting that the government or the prosecution wants the families to pay this $19,000, as you say.
It's disgusting.
I don't understand why the government has fought so hard, but it makes sense if you are saying that there are some things that could come into the public domain that won't look good for the prosecutors. This is a case we have done here on Monsters Who Murder, yes. Serial Killer Confessions. This might be one that would be worth going back now that we're doing the video podcast, because yep. He was fascinating to watch in that interrogation.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you actually remember that. So, yes, he sat at the head of a table and just sort of sprouted all of this nonsense as they were going through it and tried to blame other people and said that people have been killed since and that he's not responsible, and it just shows the arrogance that he had. I'd love to see footage of him now because he's fat and bald. So not that I don't love fat and bald men, believe me, I do, but the fact that this man was so much about his looks and, you know, he had that blonde fringe flick and had all this stuff about how he looked, to know now that he doesn't look like that. I think some people forget about that, and we will go into the Menendez brothers another time, but I just think it would be interesting to see him in court. I would love to see cameras in there seeing all of this information going out there, but unfortunately Canada, like Australia, does have very much a closed court.
Okay, let's move on, because outback serial killer Regina K. Arthrell has lost a plea not to wear a tracking anklet as part of her parole conditions. To give you some background into the case, let's take a look at this report from Nine News from a few weeks ago when the New South Wales government was fighting softer bail conditions.
When this elderly woman was exposed to her neighbours as serial killer Reginald Arthrell, she was run out of her Yagoona nursing home.
But no one's scared.
Now known as Regina K, but still capable of violence, according to expert doctors. The state government is fighting to keep the murderer under strict supervision before it expires in 2 weeks. K walked from jail last November after serving almost 24 years for bludgeoning fiancé Vinette Mulhall to death at Coonabarabran while on parole for 2 other killings. The 75-year-old wants to go bush and reconnect with a former prison boyfriend. A court told she's made progress on her emotional state and alcohol abuse by transitioning to a woman.
The killer also wanted to be able to drink alcohol and have free use of the internet, but Justice Richard Button has instead imposed a 2-year extended supervision order on the triple murderer with strict conditions until she is aged just over 77 years. Amanda, I have a couple of questions. First, your thoughts on the judgment.
I think it's the best that they can get, because we know that they actually tried to extend her time in prison, but they weren't able to get that across the line. So now we are seeing that she's wanting more and more freedoms, but, you know, they're just trying to get that because they know that Arthrell has actually murdered whilst on parole for 2 murders. So it's just crazy that they think that even though he's not 77, that it's absolutely likely that there could be further violence if she's not under control. So it's just, I'm sorry, I'm just so flabbergasted by this, that the freedoms that this person is getting for being a triple murderer is more than a lot of people get. So, you know, I won't even talk about lockdown, I promise.
All right. Let me talk to you about this, though. I've noticed a few killers have transitioned while serving out their sentences. Is it possible gender identity issues played a part in their psychopathy? Well, you know, let's remember, there wasn't a lot of tolerance for people who were seen as different when people like Arthrell were young. And I don't mean to say that if you're transitioning, you're a psychopath, but what I'm saying is that if those tendencies are there and you are different and you're don't feel like you fit in, it could possibly lead you down a path.
Yes and no. I mean, transgender, yes, it is completely far more accepted these days compared to when it was then. But
even being gay wasn't accepted. Let's be honest here. Yeah, from a social point of view, being gay, let alone transitioning, was not accepted. And that Feeling like an outsider from society has to do something to your psyche. Once again, not saying you become a psychopath who wants to kill people, but I'm saying if this person had issues, or any of these people had already had issues, and society is not their friend, can it lead them down that dark road?
Still yes and no, because I think that there are parts of that journey that for some of them is actually a true journey. And like people like Jeffrey Dahmer and John Wayne Gacy, who sort of killed gay people or people that they perceived as gay in a way to sort of reconcile what that they're feeling and trying to project it onto their victims. But also there's people like Richard Speck and now Arthur that I believe that this is more of a survival technique. Is he a true transitioning non-binary? I don't think so. I think that this is more about this is the way that she is projecting that she is a harmless person now as an elderly person. I think someone who is transitioning would do it far differently to how this is happening. And what we're seeing actually is that Arthur Earl's being treated like Dennis Ferguson was many, many decades ago. That was a pedophile that took children across state lines and raped them and all of that. And he was hounded until the very last moment of his death. So I think this is what we're seeing now. Is it justified? Yeah, I think so. I think people who kill children and spouses and all that sort of stuff probably don't deserve a very comfortable life after they've been released, after killing three people. We have to remember that part. Why is this person on the street regardless? So the fact that the government can actually get a two-year restriction, I think that that's showing something that they can do, because they're just trying to find a legal way to keep control of Arthur Earl that wasn't happening when he was basically released.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, last week our psychological profile was on Ryan Waller. Waller was the prime suspect in the murder of his girlfriend, 21-year-old Heather Kwan. After enduring a six-hour wait in the back of a police car and an intense police interview, it was finally discovered Waller had been shot in the face, as he had claimed multiple times, and was a victim of the home invasion. Richie Carver and his father Larry were eventually found guilty of attempting to break into Ryan's Arizona home on the evening of December 23, 2006. After the interrogation we witnessed last week, Ryan was admitted to hospital as a major trauma. He had multiple surgeries and lost his left eye, as well as part of his brain. He would suffer seizures for the next decade, and on January 21, 2016, following a severe seizure, he passed away. Richie and Larry Carver were sentenced to life imprisonment. Amanda, I want to have a quick look at the fallout of this case, as I talked about last week. Let's start with a news report at the time where Ryan's father spoke to Channel 3's Good Evening Arizona.
I knew something was wrong. Just had that gut feeling.
Don Waller was worried sick when his son Ryan didn't show up for Christmas dinner. So he asked police to do a welfare check.
The officers checked the house and found a woman deceased on the couch.
Police also found Waller's 18-year-old son.
It appeared he had some injuries in his facial area. It appeared he possibly had been the victim of an assault.
We see them walk out with somebody in handcuffs who looked like my son, but it's nighttime, and I could see this person, the side of their face was pretty mangled, and they put him in the back of a police car.
According to the father, his son sat in the back of a police car without medical treatment. Fire dispatch records indicate a unit was sent at 1:30 in the morning to verify the female victim inside was deceased.
Paramedics went in the house and came out of the house later on and drove down the street and never once went and looked at my son that was sitting in the police car.
Why wasn't he transported to for medical attention?
I don't know if he was treated initially at the scene. I know the fire department went to the scene for the young lady.
According to fire records, Ryan was transported to the hospital at 6:30 in the morning, when detectives learned the young man had been shot in the face.
I'm sick. I'm just devastated. My son is in there. He has to go through surgery. He has bone fragments and bullet fragments in his brain, bleeding in the brain, and I don't know if I'll ever see my son walk out of there again.
Now, obviously, Amanda, we watched last week as Ryan went through that shocking interrogation where he obviously wasn't in a right state of mind. He had been shot like he claimed, and he even had to wait in that police car for 6 hours. We know things they didn't in that report. That report was of its time. But Ryan's dad became a big advocate for him, didn't he?
He did, because there was so many flaws in the system that it was incredulous that he actually had to go through that. There is actually evidence that they took 36 photos of his injuries to his face at the house, and no one bothered to think, oh, gee, they're pretty big, awful wounds. I mean, we saw it on camera. The first thing you see is this massive black eye. His nose is messed up. And, you know, the ambulance and the fireys didn't even look at him. You know, that officer just then on the camera is going, oh, I don't know if he was treated at the scene. We know he wasn't treated at the scene. We know that no one looked at him. We know that he sat in a police car for 6 hours whilst they processed the scene. Like, there's nothing in this that was right. So Dom Waller has the absolute right to sort of go a bit crazy. And like a lot of people said in the YouTube videos, you know, we hope that he now owns the Arizona Police, because they didn't do a good job for his son. And the fact that he then become a high care patient because of the wounds that he had suffered with the internal bleeding, and one of the shots actually exploded the side of his face, and the fact that he wasn't allowed that treatment, you know, as we saw, and a lot of people said to me as we did that as a two-parter, they went, oh, I know there's something wrong. I'm not, you know, a clinical person, but I can tell that he is in more than just pain. This is not someone who's just been beaten up. This is someone with some serious issues, and we find out later that he had two bullets in his head.
Yep. And I was saying the same thing. I didn't know what it was, and I was thinking drugs, I was thinking concussion. This guy was guilty until proven innocent. That is the simple fact here.
Absolutely.
Was there any fallout over the way the police handled this investigation?
Oh, yeah, there certainly was, because they had a lot to answer for, and that's where Don came into it, to make sure that they were accountable, because there is first aid and everything that all these police officers have to do, and they didn't render him first aid. They treated him as a criminal. They didn't care. They took photos of his feet. They took photos of his face. They were more concerned about that than they were about the welfare of this person. As you said, they treated him guilty before finding that he's an innocent victim in here. So there was a lot of citations that happened, all this sort of stuff, to make sure that if they find someone on scene that looks like that, that they actually get seen, because, you know, this was fatal.
Yeah, absolutely. And the case became more complicated because of Larry Carver's wife, didn't it?
Yeah, so Larry Carver's wife, they had broken up. Some reports say that they had divorced, but something was going on. They still had a relationship, though it was fractured. And what happened was that she actually went to the police and said, this is what my husband has told me. And so she did it willingly. She didn't sort of get hauled in or put under arrest. She came in and told them that he had confessed to this crime. And then when it got to court, they decided, you know, she decided to use spousal privilege and refused to actually testify. So then what we have now is Michelle Kwan's law, and it was to say that people in a spousal relationship can be compelled to make a testimony that may convict their significant other. Then it went through a whole legal thing, because they said, well, the precedence has now been set after this case, and so then they had to prove that they had to actually go back and make this retrospectively, and they did. And so it sort of, it got dropped and then picked up a couple of times before he finally went to trial and was finally found guilty.
It's interesting searching online about this story. There isn't actually that much out there, which is quite surprising. I think if it happened now, we would have loads and loads of internet stories and news items. But because the internet archive has really started in the late 2000s, it's not all there. So it has been fascinating to watch. Yeah. It's really interesting if you want to see the things we're talking about here on Monsters Who Murder Serial Killer Confessions, and there's multiple ways to do that. The easiest way is to go to mwm.uscreen.io. Right there, you can buy an episode for $5, or you can subscribe for a monthly subscription of $15, and that will give you access to all videos. Meanwhile, you can also do it as part of our Patreon feed, where on our $25 tier, you can get access to the videos that we produce each week. Or just for $5, you get early access to the new episodes. $10 and up, you get access to Amanda's secret Facebook group. For $20, you get access to the group calls we do each month. And our $50 tiers get one-on-one chats with Amanda. There's a lot of reasons to go to patreon.com/MWMconfessions. All right, in a moment, the emergency call that will take you on a journey you won't see coming. It's the emergency call of Debbie Stevens. Monsters Who Murder, Serial Killer Confessions. We'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Monsters Who Murder, Serial Killer Confessions.
Police found 27 corpses.
Australia's worst serial killer.
Even though I didn't want to get in the car, I had to.
With Amanda Howard and Robert McKnight.
This week we're going to take you through a compelling emergency call. While in past episodes we've brought you multiple calls, today we're focusing on one in particular. This is a call where every decision made can be the difference between life and death. At 4:38 a.m. on August 24, 2019, 47-year-old Debbie Stevens had headed out in her SUV to deliver papers, finding her usual route blocked by rising waters. She tried a different way and found herself bogged in another flooded area. She rang 911, begging for help. Donna Renayu answered the call.
911, where's your emergency?
I'm in an emergency, a severe emergency. I'm in a flooding. My car veered off the road while I was doing my newspapers, and I'm flooded over here on the end of Kincaid, and it's all the way up to my windows, and I can't get out, and I'm scared to death, ma'am. Can you please help me really bad?
I need you to calm down. I need you to tell me where you are.
I don't know, ma'am. I'm on the end of Kincaid down here by these apartments. There's some apartments on Kincaid. I don't know what they're called.
What color is your vehicle?
Avenue. On the other side of Kincaid, at the very end of Kincaid Street, there's some apartments, and I
right.
saw...
Right, do you have a dark blue car, is what I'm asking you? What color is your vehicle?
Yeah, dark... It's a gray SUV, laying the window. The mortar's all the way up to my windows.
Okay, hold on for me. Don't hang up.
Okay, that's interesting. While the lady was giving information on her location, she was interrupted to ask about what colour the car was, asking specifically if it was a dark blue vehicle. Why did she ask that?
Well, I think we can guess that what happened was that there had been other calls about another car that had been bogged and was in rising waters as well, and that was a dark blue vehicle similar to hers but not the same. So okay. The fact that she's giving all of this information that should be being written down, the dispatch is going, is it a blue car? You know, I know that they're not supposed to get excited. I know they're not supposed to sort of panic them, you know, but there is almost a complacency from this very opening of this call that she sort of, we can hear this woman is panicked and we know that they need to calm them down, but she's asking questions that aren't really pertinent. Basically, to me, I think she's saying, oh, she was going to say, oh, that call's come through, see you later. Yeah. And that's not what was going to happen.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, Debbie keeps talking, trying to tell dispatch that she's actually very scared.
And it's coming in my windows. I mean, I'm floating in water right now, ma'am.
And you're at close to the area, 5801 Kincaid?
Yes, ma'am. I need help right now. I'm soaking wet. I'm sick, and I don't know what to do, ma'am.
Okay, what's your name?
Debbie Stevens. Please help me. I don't want to die.
You're not going to die. Hold on for a minute.
Well, I'm scared. I'm sorry. I didn't know the water. I couldn't see the water when I came up on it, man. It just all of a sudden hit me.
And you're in a gray van?
I'm in a gray SUV, a Mazda CX-9.
And you are a paper person?
Yes, I'm a paper person. Please send somebody fast to get me. I'm scared.
Okay, listen to me.
I can't swim. I'm going to drown.
You're not going to drown. Just calm down.
Well, ma'am, it's all the way up to my chest.
Okay,
please hurry.
Stand. Hold on for me.
I'm scared.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
It's fine to be scared. You have a right to be scared.
I'm
hold
scared.
On
okay, I know dispatchers need to be calm and help as best they can. Is it just me, or does this one seem almost disinterested?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, she's justifying, yes, that you're allowed to be scared, but her complacency, and this is going to be a word I'm going to use a lot in this interview, is to a point that, like, Debbie is apologising for actually being scared. You know, this is someone who is very caring. You can tell that she's apologising because she's such a gentle person that she's, I'm sorry, ma'am. Like, she's being polite and well-mannered when, you know, the dispatcher is saying, you're not going to drown. Like, she doesn't know. She's saying, the water is up to my windows. I cannot swim. Yeah. And she's saying, oh, you're not going to drown.
It is interesting because Debbie is literally saying there is water coming up to her windows. That to me is a red flag. This woman is genuinely scared of dying. This isn't a bog. This is flooding waters coming into her car.
It is, and it's insane that she's more concerned about the colour of the car and that she's a paper person. Like, she delivers brochures
the colour
and,
I get,
and newspapers.
The paper, who gives a shit? Unless you are at the point where you're trying to distract, I get that, but we're not at that point yet. We're at the point where vital information needs to be gathered to get the crew out there.
Yep, and she's given the address multiple times. She's not 100% sure where she is, and I know that streets in the US are massively long, but she's trying to give as much detail as she can. And the dispatcher is just asking some very random questions that are throwing her. And she's like, I'm trying to blurt out what I need to tell you, and you're asking me, I deliver papers. Yes, not going to help. It's actually going to make it worse because that will become like a massive solid brick once the water hits all those papers in the back of her SUV.
Oh, very good point. Look, the call continues with Debbie in absolute terror.
Did you go off the road into a ditch?
No, ma'am. I was in the parking lot of the apartment cutting through to go to my paper route because I couldn't go down 66th Street because it was flooded. And when I got to the end, I couldn't see the water in that driveway, and there was water everywhere. And it just took me away and started pulling me, just sucking me in, and then my car died. How long is it gonna be, man? My phone's gonna die, and I can't charge it. It's gonna get wet. It's all the way up to my neck almost.
But look, if you're having an emotional reaction to this, you're not the only one. I can see Amanda in my preview monitor holding her breath as she sees this. My wife, Amanda, who switches the show, I think you might have heard her a couple of times in the background reacting. This is heart-stopping stuff. Amanda, in the last section, she said the water was up to her chest and now it's up to her neck. This water is fast rising. The fear must be unimaginable.
My goosebumps are just going crazy right now. I can't imagine. I have a massive fear of drowning because I did drown when I was a child. So I have a whole thing about safety and water and everything like that. So we have a 47-year-old.
She said that her car has fine when I took my hands off you. So anyway, a joke to lighten the tension. All right.
That does help. It does help. I'm sorry. But yeah, you know, we are seeing that she is begging. How long is it going to be? She knows she doesn't have long. When she's saying it's up to her neck, we'll actually realize that that's the water outside the car, not inside yet, because it's going to come inside very soon. She is already wet because it has sort of splashed in, but on the outside it's up to her neck. I had to sort of work that out because she changes where it's up to a couple of times during this, and it's because it's the inside water and the outside water, which is very different parts of this, you know. And she's
well, that's
saying,
what I took, because the window is up, the water is up to the windows and it's leaking into the car and it's rising in the car as well.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So it's not up to her neck inside yet, but it's just a matter of time. And, you know, this is a woman who is in an unfamiliar area because, as we said at the beginning, she had been sidetracked because of the water elsewhere. She's hit it at like 4 a.m. So it's dark outside with the rain, with the water and everything. She has no idea what's going on. She was just going out to do part of her job. She actually shares this job with her mum, which we'll come into it later. But, you know, she's just saying, how long is it going to be? And the dispatcher is not giving her answers. She's just like typing or doing whatever. I know she has a lot of stuff to do that she can't sort of converse with her while she's trying to get the other bits and pieces and getting people on the roads and all this sort of stuff. But
what I'm unclear of, if I can be honest, is whether the call has been placed to get someone to her yet. I'm not sure if it has.
It's not. No, right. Not yet. As far as we can tell, not yet, because she does the dispatcher, I think her name's Donna, actually says, I'm making the call now. So we know that it hasn't happened yet.
Okay, so we're about to get into our fourth clip of this as this situation takes place. We know that every second counts. Well, and here we've got Debbie continuing to plead with Donna, the dispatcher, to get her help quickly. Let's see if that call gets put out here.
Okay, hold on for me.
Hello?
I'm listening to you, so I said hold on for me.
Oh, God, please help me. Lord, please help me. I don't want to die.
Miss Debbie, I need you to calm down and hold on, okay?
Oh, I'm scared, ma'am. I'm sorry. I'm scared. I need the cops to come get me. I need somebody to help me. I'm scared.
Are you the only one in the vehicle?
Yes, I'm the only one in the vehicle with all my papers floating around me.
Okay, listen to me. Make sure
yes,
you're
ma'am.
In the area of 5801 Kincaid.
I don't know where 5801 Kincaid is. I don't know. I just know there's two sets of apartments
no,
over there.
She's not sure. Listen to me. If you're doing the paper,
yes.
You got to know at least a little bit of where you are.
I can do this paper route over here, ma'am. I was cutting through to go to my paper route because I couldn't get down 63.
But tell me what you see then. What do you see?
There's an apartment because all I see is an apartment. I don't know the names of any of these apartments
what
over
are the
here.
What does the apartment complex look like?
I can't see them, but man, there's two sets of apartment complexes, one on the right and one on the left. And I'm in the back side of them back here in a bunch of grass. It looks like a bunch of trees.
Okay. I'm going to send somebody out there to you, okay?
What? The door is getting up to me. I'm scared. How long is it going to take?
I don't have an officer available, so it's going to take a minute. So I'm going to try to get somebody out there to you to call them, okay?
I'm gonna die. It's all the way up to my windows. I'm gonna die.
You're not
I
gonna
can't die.
This woman is genuinely scared, and rightly so. The water is rising. She's being told she won't die. I don't know if the dispatcher is trying to, if that's the dispatcher's way of trying to calm her down. But the worst thing here, I don't have an officer available. I mean, this is outrageous.
It is so disgusting. She has just said that she's on the grass, which means that she's already been swept off the road. She wasn't doing a delivery in that area, you know. Well, you should know where you are if this is your paper route, you know. She thinks that she's about to go and pick up a kid on the side of the road who skinned his knee. Literally, that's how this case is being treated. She is saying the water's up to her windows. She is terrified. She's panicked. She doesn't know where she is. She's trying to give descriptions of things, and she's saying, I'm behind all of this. I can't see names. Because I'm in the back streets because I was trying to sort of go between all of this floodwater. You know, she was trying to do the best she possibly can for a bloody paper route. It's just devastating. But at the same time, you know, don't be stupid. You're not going to drown. Like,
and she's in a life and death situation apologising because she feels like she's wasting this dispatcher's time. Yeah. And I've got to play this next clip because as Debbie's trying to give more information, listen to how it pisses the dispatcher off. Have a listen.
Hold on for me.
I'm going to get out and swim. If I could, I would. But I don't know how to swim, baby. I'm scared. And there's people over there watching me, and they're probably laughing, and they're over there looking at me.
People are looking at you, and they're not going to help you?
Two sets of cars over there, and they're just all looking at me like I'm stupid. I couldn't help it. I love it. They just started pulling me down the road.
Okay, hold on for me.
I got my lights on in my car. That's the only thing you can see. I just need help. It's getting bad. It's going to pass my steering wheel. I'm going to drown. Please help me. Please help me. How long is it going
to
be? Please,
listen
ma'am.
To me. Listen to me. I need you to calm down and hold on.
Okay? I'm scared, ma'am.
I understand that you're scared, but there's nothing I can do sitting in a chair, so you're going to have to hold on, and I'm going to send you somebody, okay?
Can't do anything sitting in your chair. That is literally your job, and you still haven't sent anyone. I mean...
Yep. Yep. It's just incredible. She's basically going to basically send a police officer to do a drive-by is what she sounds like, yep, that she's actually trying to arrange. Not telling the other people that need to come in for help that there are multiple people standing around. So maybe someone else, she could call out to the rest of the people in her office saying, is anyone else getting calls from this? Does someone have an address? You know, she's saying, so what, they're standing there staring at you, but they're not helping you. The water is up to her steering wheel on the outside of her car. Who is literally going to go and walk into that flood water to help her? They can't. They're watching her. They're watching a woman die.
And they don't know what to do. This is floodwaters that are obviously moving at pace because it swept a car out, you know.
Yeah.
I think Debbie, under these circumstances, has been very clear and concise about what she does and doesn't know. She's given the information on what she was doing. She's given as much information on what street she's in. She doesn't know the name of it. It's not the usual route or route, as they say in America. But listen to this next part as dispatch finally puts the details out but makes several mistakes.
I'm scared. Just stay on the phone with me, okay?
I'm scared. Somebody save me.
Am I not on the phone with you trying to get you some help?
Yes.
Okay,
somebody get me out before I die. I'm sorry.
You're not going to die. I don't know why you're freaking out. It's okay. I know the water level is high. I understand that, but you're freaking out doing nothing but losing your oxygen up in there, so just calm down.
This isn't a moment for a life lesson. Like, seriously, the dispatcher getting angry because Debbie is fearful and the dispatcher abusing her. This is abuse.
It is. You know, there's no empathy happening here at all. You know, I know you're scared, but crying, you're going to use up your oxygen. You can hear Debbie freeze, thinking, oh, my God, I'm using up my oxygen in my watery tomb. You can almost hear that thought process going, that she is begging for help. And nowhere yet has the dispatcher said, help is on the way.
No.
We haven't got to that point yet. And so she's like, she just wants, all she wants to hear is help is on the way. We're going to get you there. We've had other calls. We know where you are. We're coming to save you. But no, that's not what we're hearing.
No.
It's just evil.
And things are about to take an even worse turn because Debbie's phone is dying.
Are they not going to come get me?
You said what? I'm sorry.
When are they going to be here?
As soon as they get there.
Well, how long is that going to be before I die?
Yeah, I know.
Man, my phone's gonna die and they're not gonna find me and it's gonna ruin my brand new phone.
Do you really care about your brand new phone? I mean, you're over there crying for your life. Who cares about your phone?
I need to get down. I need to throw up. I need to throw up right now.
Well, then you're in water. You can throw up. It's not gonna matter. If you got throw up on yourself, they'll still help you.
No, my car is just gonna catch on fire.
How, if it's underwater?
It's turned on. I can't turn it off.
Your car is not gonna catch fire in water.
This is incompetent. If a dispatcher can't understand why it's an issue if the phone goes flat, I mean, this is amateur stuff. If the phone's flat, she can't be on the phone to you and help you and help you try to help her. This is just cruel.
It is cruel. It is disgusting. It is horrifying that she's making these assumptions. She literally knows nothing about what's going on. She is not listening to a single thing that this woman's saying. I think as far as the dispatcher is concerned, she's sitting in ankle-deep water going down a creek. She is not realizing that she's in such rampant floodwaters that are actually entering her car. She is, you know, she just said, well, you know, stop using your oxygen up. Who cares about your new phone when you think that you're going to die? If you want to vomit, vomit. You know, these are all parts of someone in absolute terror. People in terror vomit. This happens. And this woman is saying that she's going to do that. She's letting her know how fearful she is becoming. And the dispatcher doesn't give a shit. She literally does not care. I know that they have to sort of step back. I know all of this, and we know that we have a lot of dispatchers and ex-dispatchers that have that are part of our Patreon and our open membership, yep. And they know how you need to step away from this. But this is beyond stepping away. This is.
Oh, I'd love to hear their reactions to this, because I think every one of them will be angry about this.
Yeah, this is disgusting. This is showing the bad end of it, and I get that because they save lives, and when I lost my husband and I rung Triple O, I got fantastic help, and they do all of the right thing. We're looking at the extreme, but this just shows you how horrifying it can be. And as you said, we're talking about a life or death situation right here, but Donna, the dispatcher, does not even consider that this is life or death. She just believes that she's listening to a panicking person who can't swim, and so she's out of her comfort zone, not that this is someone who is terrified that she's about to die.
Yeah. Well, if you were facing your last breaths, what would you want to do? Probably talk to your family. Debbie wants to do the same thing.
Just stay on the phone with me. I'm going to get somebody there to you. They should be there. Because I'm sending the fire out to you to help you out.
And I put you on hold. Can I need to call my mother-in-law so she knows I'm okay.
Okay, well, you're not okay, so you can call your mother-in-law when you're actually out of the vehicle. So, no, you cannot call her right now.
Okay. I'm sorry. Can you pray? Will you pray with me?
In her vehicle.
Hello?
I'm here. I can still hear everything you're saying to me.
Will you pray with me, please?
You go ahead and start off the prayer, and I'll listen to you. I sure will.
This woman wants comfort in her final minutes. That's what it sounds like. We don't know how this ends yet, but at the moment we have to assume that Debbie thinks she is dying. Whether she is or not, she is in a very perilous situation. She believes these are her last moments, and she wants comfort. She is certainly not getting that.
No, she's not. Sorry. This is where it gets me, you know. She wants comfort in prayer. You know, she wants her to start. I know that the dispatcher is talking to other people now because we hear that part as well. But, you know, she can just, you start off, Darrell, and I'll just join in, you know. You know, you can't ring your mother-in-law. When you're out of this show, you can give her a call. You know, this woman is, like, wanting her last moments recorded. She wants to say, Mom, I love you, you know, tell the kids, tell her husband, whoever her family is. She wants that comfort because she's at a point now of acceptance that she may not get help. And she's saying, you know, the police should be there now. I'm sending the fire brigade. You haven't said that, doll. You haven't told her that the fire brigade is on its way. She wants to hear these things, to know that people are taking her seriously and that she's not a crackpot, because obviously the 911 calls be going crazy right now because she's probably not the only person stuck in floodwaters, and people
it's
have
pretty obvious by now
house,
she's so. Not a crackpot. This is a woman genuinely scared for her life.
Yeah. Yeah, and Donna the dispatcher does not care, and this woman is now wanting to pray. She wants her soul to go to heaven because she's in her coffin, is what she believes right now. And, you know, yeah, you go and pray.
Mm. All right, let's continue.
Please just help me. Get me out of this water safely, dear Father. One of us have to have the new peace, Father. Just be with me and protect me and help me, dear Father, please. Dear Father, help me. My vehicle's ruined.
Yeah, but it's better that your vehicle is ruined than you being swept away and nobody knows where you are. So just get on the phone.
I'm going to be swept away because my mom
No, you're not. You have nowhere to be swept away to besides the street that you're on, so just calm down, okay?
Well, I'm at the end of a street, but man,
Ryan, I'm looking at it right now, and at the end of the street is some bushes, so you'll be just fine.
Ma'am, it's getting all the way up to my chest, and I'm getting
I know the water's up to your chest. Just stay on the phone with me, and I have an officer and the fire department coming out to you, so just hold on, okay?
Thank you. I'm sorry if I'm rude, but I'm scared.
You're not being rude. I know you're scared. Just calm down for me.
I'm scared. I've never had anything like this happen to me before.
Well, this will teach you next time. Don't drive in the water.
couldn't see it, ma'am. I'm sorry, or I wouldn't have.
I don't see how you didn't see it. You had to go right over it, so.
No, ma'am. I was in the drive. I was in the parking lot. There was no water where I was at.
Okay.
And when I got to the end of the parking lot, I was looking for the road to get out into the main road. When I got to the main road, it was too late. There was water, and I couldn't see it fast enough.
The water just didn't appear.
I didn't see it fast enough. My headlight went out, and I couldn't see it.
Okay.
Flash flooding is a thing. I don't know if it was flash flooding. Dispatch says, and I can see you crying there, Amanda.
Yep.
She's having a look at a Google map from 3 years ago. The dispatcher at no stage believes this woman is in real trouble. It's obvious. It's obvious.
No, and she's blaming her. You know, well, they just didn't appear. And she's like, no, I was in a parking garage and I was coming down. I was trying to find the street. It's dark. I'm not in an area I know. The usual route I go was flooded, so I thought I'd go a safe way, you know. And she has said before that she's on the grass. She's not on a road. And she has said that. And this dispatcher still didn't get that. She has already been swept away part of the way. The fact that she can see bushes on a Google map, who gives a shit? This woman is in dire need, and she just really thinks that she's in, like, you know, a tiny trickle down the side of a gutter. That's all she thinks is happening. And she, you know, like, she is, Debbie is apologizing. I'm sorry if I'm being rude. She's not being rude, because I would have been using words that she hasn't even thought of yet, because it's just, it's.
I get. I know what you're feeling.
Lady, and hug her.
I think we are all feeling this, watching this, and I got to tell you, my energy level has sunk really low watching this. It's really difficult. I want to see where this goes. I'm hoping for the best. You know, the dispatcher is criticising her decisions that got her into this. This is not the time. Right now it's about saving a life. But I don't know how it can happen, but the dispatcher actually gets unbelievably worse.
I think, even though you can't swim, I think you can still stand up in this. How tall are you?
Probably higher than me.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I'm only 5 foot tall.
Okay, well, you're not 3 foot, so you'll be just fine.
Okay. Well, the cops stand under my house. I don't live very far.
Of course.
Ma'am.
10-4. They're pulling somebody else out the water, and as soon as they do, they'll come to you, so just stay right there, okay?
I'm not going nowhere, ma'am. I can't go nowhere.
She's now been called a liar just to make things worse.
Yeah, so, you know, well, you're not 3 foot tall, so there's no problem, you know, and they're dealing with someone else who has a far more worse predicament than you, so you just have to wait in the queue for us to get to you, because you're not 3 foot tall and the water's only 3 foot high. Yeah, because she's got a camera live, you know, one of those helicopter things watching exactly what's happening right now. Like, she has said that the water is this high, and she's saying, well, no, it can't be. And this woman is tiny. She said she's 5 foot. I'm 5 foot two. You know, so I know even in 3 foot water, you can be gone in a second. So,
especially if the current is racing down. This is flooding. She hasn't gone into a still creek. She is in a flooding situation. No one can know how high the water is. And even if she's right, she's already said that the water is above the window. It's in the car. So trying to force that door open is a difficult thing. But this dispatcher isn't done blaming Debbie yet. Have a listen.
A lot of people have called in on you, so I don't think that nobody's just sitting there. They actually called in, but they're not going to get their self in danger because you put yourself in danger.
I understand that, ma'am. I understand that. I'm just scared.
I know you're scared.
So we're at the 15-minute mark. And in this time, Donna, the dispatcher, has essentially called Debbie a liar, materialistic, an idiot, and hysterical, if not any other derogative words you can think of. Amanda, look, Where do we go from here? At least people are on their way. We do know that now.
Yeah. Yeah, and the fact that other people have called in, that has been the first bit of comfort she would have got from that, because now other people have called in because she was panicking that they didn't know where she was. And the fact that the dispatcher is saying, I can see bushes, you're going to be fine. And when Debbie doesn't know the answers or is confused by what she's saying, she stops talking. And that's what she's done a few times. The fact that now other people have rung in about her is helpful. But as we know, Donna has actually called her a liar. It's only 3 foot high, all this sort of stuff. So is she getting this from the other calls? Because if she is, why isn't she listening to the woman on her call and not the 12 others going on around her? So, you know, this is the first moment of comfort, but it comes after all of these horrifying things. And she keeps apologising to her. Debbie really believes that she's wasting this dispatcher's time. Mm. She really believes that she has better things to do. And apparently the dispatcher agrees with that.
I agree. But the dispatcher does give some what would seem good news with the fire brigade turning up.
And the street goes to the end, and my car veered off to the left, and I'm behind these last set of apartments on the left-hand side. I'm behind them. I guess it's a circle down there. I don't know. I've never driven down on this part. I don't know, ma'am.
She said she's in between both apartment complexes on the street at the dead end.
In the very back side, there's a bunch of trees.
Right there. She showed us 5801 at the end.
The back side of these apartments over here where these people are at, they can all see me. They're all standing out there watching
me. Miss Debbie, you're going to have to shut up, okay?
Wow.
Yep.
She can hear the dispatcher getting the information wrong and she's told to shut up. Look, I think we all agree this dispatcher is terrible. Terrible. I need to just, and it's not going to help us just calling that out constantly. This woman is woeful. I want to get to the next clip. I want to find out what's happening, if you're okay with that, because
yeah.
Let's just listen to the next clip.
Oh my God, my car is starting to move. Oh man, my car is starting to move, please.
Okay, listen to me. I know. I'm trying to get you as help as I can, okay? Just hold on for me.
Okay, ma'am, please.
I know you're scared. I know. Hold on for me because I've got to take other calls plus you and listen
to
all
these
guys.
Okay,
ma'am. Hold on for me, okay?
Okay, ma'am. Okay. Dear Lord, please just get me out, dear Lord. Please help him find me, dear Lord, please.
Station 1. Number 7 is wanting you to go ahead and clip up the boat and get it ready if they should need you. Okay, I know. Listen to me. They are in the area. They are trying to find you. They cannot find you right now. I'm trying to ping where you are, so do not hang up because this 911 call is helping me ping your location, so don't hang up on me. Okay, where are you moving to? Tell me where it's going. Okay, tell me where you are. Listen to me, hold on. I'm on the phone with her right now. She is legit freaking out. She said the vehicle is now moving in the water and she doesn't know which way it's going, so stand by.
Those were Debbie's last words. She drowned as her car got swept away. Now, Amanda, I'm going to give you a moment. Because for everyone else, I want to show you the scene when police turned up and found the vehicle. For those on the video feed, you'll see the body cam footage. Those listening will hear the officer on the scene.
I'm standing around the very back side of the apartment complex on the southeast side. And the only part of her car I can see is the roof and the dome light that's on in it. I can't get out there to her, and you're going to have to wait out here to me to get to me, so... She's way back there.
Yeah.
Is there any way I can get this off and help you?
I got another guy coming with life, Jack.
I'm going to start getting this off so I can help.
Yeah. I need a next up at North Ocean. North Ocean.
Bill, you good?
I think it's very important to see those images because on a night of flooding, the fact is the call wasn't taken more seriously. Amanda, your reaction, I think, is the reaction a lot of us are feeling as we watch this. Are you okay?
Yeah, it's just, you know, it 15 minutes is a long time in a phone call to 911. In all of that time, she could have said, we're sending someone now and keep giving the details as she gets the details. Not shut up, not settle down, you're using up your oxygen, you know, you're not 3 feet tall, so you're not going to drown, you know. And they're literally saying, we can't see anything but the roof, you know. And even if a car is 3 feet tall, I don't care, I have no idea. But just... just the fact that this poor woman could have been saved. And, you know, as I said, this is... Sorry, I'm a very ugly crier. I just caught my own view just then. It's just so heartbreaking that from the very first moment of this call, this woman could have been saved. And 15 minutes later, she's telling her to shut up and I'm going to try and think about sending an officer out to pick you up. Maybe next time you won't go into floodwaters. Next time you might ring your mother-in-law. Let's face it, she could have just rung her mother-in-law and spent those last few moments with her rather than a rude sea person that I would love to say, but I won't, who treated her like that, as that woman was begging for help. This wasn't just some hysterical person just, you know, exaggerating what's happening. This is a woman who died. We heard her die. We heard those final moments as she went under the floodwaters, and this woman still didn't give a shit until ever.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, it's interesting. On the YouTube page where this is, a comment actually said, we just listened to a 20-minute-long murder. I think that's an interesting take. Look, as you can imagine, the death sent shockwaves around the community. Here's how Fox 24 reported it at the time.
Miss Debbie, you're going to have to shut up, okay?
A horrifying 911 call that would end up being the last moments of Deborah Stevens' life.
This will teach you next time, don't drive in the water. I don't see how you didn't see it. You had to go right over it, so.
While water was rising up past her chest and completely covering Stevens' SUV, the dispatcher, Donna Renault, heard telling Stevens, who was panicking, to stop. You're not going to die. I don't know why you're freaking out. When first responders were finally able to reach Stevens and remove her from her car, she had already drowned.
I completely understand the disgust and the concern that we all have in regards to the interactions between the dispatcher and Ms. Stevens.
Fort Smith Interim Police Chief Danny Baker says Renault had been with the department for 5 years and was a certified dispatch training officer. She handed in a resignation on August 9th, and this call was taken during her last shift, very possibly her last call she took.
It's a tragic thing. I understand that. Are there things that we need to maybe look at in our response? Absolutely.
I don't have an officer available, so it's going to take a minute. So I'm going to try to get somebody out there, please.
Baker says there were 9 officers and 4 dispatchers on duty Saturday morning. inundated with 911 calls from other people also stranded in floodwaters.
Everything was done that was humanly possible, given the circumstances and at that time, to save Ms. Stevens' life. And I'm horribly sorry that that wasn't possible.
Now Baker says he'll be taking a hard look at how FSPD responds to these accidents in the future.
Obviously, we can't investigate someone who no longer works here. However, an investigation into our policies, our responses, our dispatch center. I've been in communication with the fire chief. We're looking at what we can do to maybe increase training for our dispatchers in regards to swift water rescue and other things.
I think it's very disingenuous to say that everything was done to save this woman's life.
Yeah, because we just saw that it wasn't, you know, it was just a balls up from the very first moment. There's so many words I want to use, but I'm trying to keep this PG because I you know how I get when I just get to that point.
I know. And the other thing, though, is this was her last shift. This was at care factor zero, no matter that she was dealing with life and death.
Yeah, this was, I'm just waiting to clock out. She was obviously on the night shift, probably ends at 7 a.m. like most third shifts do. So she was just counting down these last 2 hours, and it was a shit show because, as I said, there was multiple people being trapped. But you don't blame someone. She's already in the issue. She can't go back and say, oh, well, you know, I'll just reverse up and I'll be right. Thanks, you know. That wasn't an option. So blaming her, telling her that it's her fault that she's in this, that she's that her car can't possibly catch fire, and she's saying it's, you know, it's turned on, it's going, because, you know, water can get in there. And though I don't know anything about cars, not even where the petrol goes sometimes, it's it's about these issues that are happening that, you know, she hasn't even spoken about. Like, she left her interior light on hoping that they could see her. This is how desperate she was getting, and that's what made them find her, was that interior light was on. She had her front lights on, but obviously they were way deep by then. Mm-hmm. You know, but this dispatcher really did not take her seriously at a single moment in this.
Mm. Well, an investigation into the call found no wrongdoing by the dispatcher, although she was considered rude and uncaring. You just
surely
know
that is two traits that they're supposed to have. Yeah.
You just know that that was to stop the department having any liability. Sorry, I'm calling
you
that.
Yeah, it was lip service, yeah. It was 100% lip service. Yeah, Shay was rude, you know. We can't take it back, yeah. You know.
Anyway, a final footnote to this story is that the family of Debbie forgave the dispatch operator. Here they are talking to Inside Edition about the tragedy, starting with her sister-in-law, Rebecca.
Even in those moments, her last moments, she was still Debbie. She was still genuine and sincere and kind and loving and respectful.
1 hour later, first responders found her dead. Inside Edition was invited to the memorial service held for Debbie over the weekend. And it turned out to be a double service. You see, Debbie's 80-year-old mom died 3 weeks after Debbie. Her family believes she died of a broken heart.
I do think that that played a big role in her death. She was brokenhearted.
Her friends filled the pews, a community united in grief in the untimely deaths of two women gone too soon. But even in their deepest grief, her family's message is one of forgiveness for the 911 dispatcher.
I do forgive her, even though it's hard.
They are better people than me because I would never forgive. Yeah. Never. This woman deserves jail, as far as I'm concerned. Absolutely. Look, good on Debbie's family, and that's part of their healing process, I get, but I would never, ever be able to forgive.
No, it's just, you know, when I heard this call, I don't even know how I found it now. I find random things sometimes, and it... it was just a slow and torturous death, and this poor woman spent it apologizing to someone she never knew who wasn't taking her seriously. As you said, they're better people than us, because I could never forgive her. You know, the fact that her mum died, I didn't know that until you just played it out. It just breaks my heart.
Yeah, and that's why I think going forward, we're talking about doing more of the aftermath of these things as well, because there are elements that come out. And I think seeing the mum and hearing about the mum and all those other things is really, really important. Look, we're going to leave it there, but we're going to do something different. And feel free to stop the podcast or the video cast right now if you want. But I'm going to play that last 911 part again, because these are Debbie's last words. And I think we owe it to her to hear it again, as hard as it is. And it is hard. This isn't for, what do they call it, entertainment porn or anything like that. This woman died because of the inactions of someone. She was putting her life into this woman's hands. This woman, this dispatcher, let her down. And I think it is worth hearing those final moments again to understand the importance we all play if we are ever put in a situation like that. This woman died because of inaction, because of not being believed. I think that's a message for all of us. Hopefully we are never in a situation like this where it literally is life and death. But I am really sorry for this woman, and I hate the fact she, her last moments on this earth were so terrifying. But we're going to go out on it. We'll see you next week on Monsters Who Matter.
Oh, my God, my car is starting to move.
We want to start looking about us again.
Oh, man, my car is starting to move. Please.
Okay, listen to me. I know. I'm trying to get you as help as I can, okay? Just hold on for me.
Okay, ma'am, please.
I know you're scared. I know. Hold on for me, because I've got to take other calls plus you and listen
to
all
this
stuff.
Okay, ma'am.
Hold on for me, okay?
Okay, ma'am. Okay. Dear Lord, please just get me out, dear Lord. Please help him find me, dear Lord, please.
Station 1. Number 7 is wanting you to go ahead and clip up the boat and get it ready if they should need you. Okay, I know. Listen to me. They are in the area. They are trying to find you. They cannot find you right now. I'm trying to ping where you are, so do not hang up, because this 911 call is helping me ping your location, so don't hang up on me. Okay, where are you moving to? Tell me where it's going. Okay, tell me where you are. Listen to me, hold on. I'm on the phone with her right now. She is legit freaking out. She said the vehicle is now moving in the water and she doesn't know which way it's going, so stand by.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.